Hello and welcome to the Face Downs, your source for TCG news and all things Yu-Gi-Oh! I'm Lucas.
I'm Ruben.
And I'm Steve.
Oh yeah. And welcome to the Face Downs After Dark.
It's it's like
9:30.
We normally record these earlier, so it's feeling a little down under, a little late night evening radio.
Look, what about some jazz? Why don't you tune in to some easily listening?
Time for the top five sexiest male Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
Number five,
Jerry Beans Man. With thighs like that, you don't need a personality. I'm completely. Oh, we're getting delisted for
number
this one.
There's no,
I don't have any more. It's all Jerry Beans Man. He wins all five categories.
It's Jerry Beans Man and Bean Soldier.
Number one.
Woo!
Potato and chips.
I guess we may as well be honest here. We've been a bit slack this week with recording a podcast. We had some ideas. We just kind of got busy doing nothing. But yeah, anyway, here we are.
Too busy hating the format.
Busy not playing Yu-Gi-Oh! I'm not gonna lie. Yu-Gi-Oh! Has been not ass. I'm not gonna say it's ass, but a lot of the people that I like playing Yu-Gi-Oh! With are not playing Yu-Gi-Oh! And that does matter.
Absolutely, it does.
Connor's got COVID. Rest in peace. Harry and Dino have quit. Like, you know, it's fun to go to hobbies and do well, but I mean, he's taking a break. To say that it feels like there's less competition?
No,
I feel like I'm going to hobbies and it's just like
totally valid.
There's like new players and I'm just like, I'm sorry, dude. Like, my deck's really good and your deck is cool and I'm sure it does cool stuff against decks that are not playing adventure, but you are just going to lose to Rite of Aramisia and that is all that's happening. It's kind of boring.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I quite like that comment that you feel like there's less competition. I think that it's absolutely valid. Like, there's no yes, there are regionals occurring. We had OTS champs at the start of this month, but it's just a matter of a lot of people are just in the woodworks. Like, they're just waiting to come out for the next upcoming event. And at this moment in time, I agree with your statement. I feel like there is less competition coming around, or less, not so much, let's not say less competition, less people with a competitive mindset.
I think it's just fallout of living in a small country. If you go to a game store in America that gets 1 to 200 players, there's just going to be such a low of people that you're never going to get a repeat experience. But I think I've just been going to a lot of events where I've been seeing the same people and they're still just playing the same kind of semi-casual, semi-competitive decks. And I'm still beating them with adventure. And it feels so terrible. I mean, Joe, you've had a lot of experience playing against newer players and you yourself kind of tapped out after a while playing meta because it just felt
wrong. In Palmy, we do have like a very new player base. I mean, most of the players here have been playing for less than a year. We've got a few that are like started up over the last 6 months. Like, we are building a community. So, like, for me, it's still we're in a very exciting phase of Yu-Gi-Oh! Because I've seen like some of our players, you know, start last year and they're like slowly tapping into the meta now. And I guess Auckland for you guys, you know, you've all been playing competitively now for like a few years. Like, a new player for you guys is kind of just like, I mean, I'm not gonna say it's like a bad for you guys, but yeah. Like, I guess having more people at a lower level to start with when you first come into the game is healthier. Like, when you get chucked into the deep end against a bunch of competitive players, it's very hard to like build, I suppose. I mean, Palmy's in a very good spot for Yu-Gi-Oh! Right now. I found that the level of our Yu-Gi-Oh! Is like probably not disrespecting anyone, but a bit lower than like, say, Auckland and the major centers. We do have good players, don't get me wrong. We have players that can go to the tournaments and take tops and things like that. Yeah. But overall, our base level was slightly lower. And I think for that, it's cool for me because we're seeing some really good growth. And what I would like to do quickly is actually shout out one of my local players, Nico, who has kind of set up a really cool like learn to play thing. And I just wanted to discuss it with you guys as well. And what she does is like she's been getting her friends that are like wanting to get into the game. Tash was one of them that she set this up with. And she has like all these like little cue cards and stuff, which are like have the phases written down and like have what actions you can perform. And it's she's like actually created like a full like set of learn to play stuff with like decks that, you know, start off at like say a structure deck level, and then once they get the players get their head around that, she moves them up to another like kind of couple of decks that are at the same level, so like they don't feel like they're just getting stomped all the time. Yeah, and I just wanted to like kind of give her a bit of a shout out because she's doing something that Yu-Gi-Oh themselves don't really do, if that makes sense. Like
I kind of want to see it. I'm actually
it's
already brainstorming ideas based on what you said about cue cards. That's such a good idea.
And what she does is like, there's a in the middle of both players' mats, she'll just lay down like the draw phase. What you do, you draw a card, then you move into the standby phase, and it explains, and it has like all the actions that can be performed in the standby phase. Then it goes into the main phase one, it has all the actions you can perform and how many times you can do it. Like, it is quite succinct. Like, I'm explaining it probably quite badly, but like, yeah, it's really cool, and I think that it's something that could definitely be implemented like around the place for like learn to plays and stuff. So yeah,
you need to play that like those old How to Play Infernity ones that were memes back in the day.
Yeah,
but an actual tutorial playmat.
Yeah,
could you imagine a playmat that just had extra monster zone? This is where you summon link monsters or non-link monsters, but only, you know, like, actually explain what that is.
Oh my god, and it totally takes me back to like the original rule books that came in like the very first starter decks. Like it would tell you the rule book, it would like give you a 2-page foldout of the mat and also go, this is where you play this.
The playmats had monster and magic's trap card zone like in the
actual playmat as well. Yeah.
And yeah,
that's like Fusion a nostalgic deck thing. It'd be pretty cool if they brought that back. I mean, I guess they still put extra monster zone and pendulum scales on, but
yeah.
Besides that, it's pretty uncommon.
I don't know, we've done podcasts about it before, but I just thought it was something I saw locally that a player had been doing on their own back that I was just like really wanted to like acknowledge. And we've seen what's come of it. Like Tasha's a player has like evolved to a point where she's doing quite well at Hobby Leagues now. She almost topped the regional one a couple of weekends ago. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, it definitely worked.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of segues on to like a great conversation, and that's about community, because I feel like at this moment in time, in between like either a solved meta or obviously currently we're dealing with, you know, the fallout of the global pandemic panorama, Pan Esposito, as people like to call it, so you can still get monetized. It's quite hard to find a sense of community. And I think that actions such as you stated with Nico, obviously, you've done a lot of work generating and cultivating your Palmerston North community, the community that Luke's and I are a part of in Auckland, and I think some of its greater extent, like regions as well, as well as obviously us as the Facedowns having our subscribers and our follower community. It is like something that keeps people together during times where people may feel like lulls in the game and lacking motivation. And I guess, you know, my first question is probably like, do we think that a community is important? I think I know the answer, but
yes.
Oh,
yes. Question.
But why is community important?
I mean, for me now, like I'm at a point where like I've done quite a lot of competitive play, but I enjoy the community side of Yu-Gi-Oh! Heaps more than like the competitive side. I like the fact that we get to go in every week, catch up with these people, make friendships with them, and like you go into Hobby League and you have like a catch up. You almost talk about, you end up talking about other things that just aren't Yu-Gi-Oh. You just have a good time, and that's the bit of Yu-Gi-Oh that I really enjoy, and that Palmy has just been doing really well at. Like everyone just gets on very well. They all like help each other out, build in things, and like for me, and I think anyone else who plays in Palmy can kind of see that our community has been welcoming new players very, I guess, well. Like no one feels like too threatened to like not join in. So that's what I really like. I want it just to carry on going the way it's going.
Yeah, I think that especially for like Lucas and I, keeping in touch with the people that we first came into the community with has probably been like one of the greatest sounding pillars to like keep bringing us back. Obviously speaking with great friend Thomas, Thomas does take more breaks than us from the meta, and that's, you know, a lot of people do. A lot of people loves to fall in and out of the meta. Some people just go, this isn't for me, I can't do this format. Some people go, it's too expensive, it's just pay to win this format, which I think is probably a bit more of a recent problem. And I think that, you know, some people go, I just am going to, you know, just ride the wave of this format. I'll, you know, pick up what I have to. I'll make my deck adapt to what's currently going on. And I think that, you know, people like to take different paths through each meta. I think ban lists are a really good, like I'd say, a checkpoint for a lot of people, kind of reassessing where they stand within the meta and the community and how they wish to approach going forward. I think some people were very excited, this ban list, like seeing the adjustments that occurred and went, oh my god, I can actually play. There's so many cool strategies I can do. And then some people will go, okay, well, what's coming up is not something I'm interested in. So I think I might just pass on this moment in time.
Yeah, there's a sort of deck paralysis that happens in a format like this.
Yeah,
as you described, when a ban list hits, there's no new product really shaking things up. There's a very defined meta. Maybe something we can talk about after dark. is sort of our community coping mechanisms for that, because I found I can't help anyone, and it would be nice to have some sort of,
yeah,
I guess more Palmerston North-esque things in Auckland, because what's driving a lot of people away right now is I've seen people pick up decks, go, oh, maybe this one will be fun, I'll have fun with this, and they just get like bodied, like so bad. And then they just go, well,
that was cool.
Guess it's adventure or bust, isn't it? And then move on. And they there's kind of like this cyclical thing where they leave and then they come back and they're like, oh, maybe this cool rogue deck. No, that one's also not fun. Maybe if I put adventure in, no, I still have to play the best decks. And that paralysis, I think, is what's harming our enjoyment and our competitiveness right now, because there are a very set number of decks that are viable and there are huge gaps, I think, right now between viable decks and non-viable decks. Would you agree?
I'd agree.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's tough. Like, Adventure has caused a problem. And I know that we have had a full podcast just bagging Adventure.
The Adventure podcast. Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I have to admit, like, in Palmy, we have a few Adventure decks, but it's not, like, just completely swarmed by them. There's still people playing really cool, fun decks, and they can have a good time at Hobby. There's still the Trap decks that have been doing quite well. Like, we've seen Trap Tricks took out Hobby League this week. I guess it's hard, though, because Auckland, being slightly higher numbers, slightly more competitive, you naturally want to play the best stuff. So, like, everyone up there will just want to play that best stuff. And I guess the only way to solve it would be, like, a non-meta night or something, like a common charity night. But even then, like, that stuff will burn out quite fast too. So, yeah.
The tough thing is that in Auckland, there are a lot of stores and everyone's very far apart. There isn't just, like, a store that everyone goes to once a week to play Yu-Gi-Oh! There are different people who go to Shuffle and Cut, then they go to Dice Goblin, then Card Merchant. So the idea of building a community that's getting excited about a non-meta night kind of relies on your community already being close.
Yeah.
It's not a solution for when our card store is impacted and feeling like there are less people interested in playing if those people are scattered and maybe not necessarily close outside of... It's kind of already prerequisite that you have a community for that to be a solution. As much as it's a good solution, I think if you just said, oh, it's a non-meta night tonight, half people showing up wouldn't know, and they'd bring meta and they'd be like, well, I don't have a non-meta deck, so what am I supposed to do?
And we run into the same conversation we had previously of, like, what do you define as non-meta? Like, even I think most recently, you know, not to cause any, like, I don't want to stir any drama, but, you know, seeing Wilson post, like, oh, this is a non-meta tournament, and then Ross on his table had a DPE. And I was like, at what point, like...
DPE Turbo is probably meta. Like,
it's like, at what point, enough. Like, what's your threshold for a non-meta deck? And then it's like, how far in advance do you have to communicate those,
that's not even shade. It's just like, that's an...
No.
Like, he could have been playing DPE in appliances. Like, to say that he was playing a meta deck. It's just that card maybe skews things towards, like, a DPE Turbo kind of thing in a format that should be promoting... I guess, like, fun decks is almost a better way to describe it than anti-meta. And fun is a nebulous term, but we all know that means decks that do things that other decks aren't, maybe more archetypally specific or
I think
locked in a certain way.
Yeah. It's rough because I've tried as well to do it, like, a couple of non-meta night things in Palmy, and, like, you don't want to, like, override your normal hobby league because people hang out to play the what's current every Saturday, you know?
Yes.
And... like, so I had to put it on a Thursday night, and essentially, like, Thursday nights for us have become like this kind of casual thing. There's usually only about 5-6 players will show up for it, and that's completely fine. It's now become more of like a testing night just for like hobby league, or for regionals and things like that. But I initially put a non-meta night then, and the problem for us then was like Thursday nights are kind of hard for people that are working. They don't want to go out and play Yu-Gi-Oh late. They don't want to invest money into another Yu-Gi-Oh deck that's a non-meta deck, you know. So there's issues with it. And I want to kind of go on to your guys' point about Auckland having so many stores. I guess in a way, it's almost nice for us just to have the one store, because it means that community is fully centralized in that one spot. And you know, that you don't have other options, I suppose. So like, it's you go there or you don't play. It's kind of easier for us to run other things, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
So what do you do when you have a kind of paralysis about what to play, whether it's because you don't want to play the same deck again, or if it's because you just can't find a deck in a meta that you like,
or it's out of your price range, like the demand for costing. Yeah,
what do you do? I mean, what do you do, Joe, when you've played metas that you just weren't interested in, but you don't necessarily want to quit Yu-Gi-Oh because you still feel that drive, you still feel that urge to participate in the hobby that you love?
Remember about, I think it was 2015, I was a bit like done with playing. So what I decided to do instead was like I judged a couple of events. And then I also came up to, I believe it was the Nationals, and I actually just did photography for Keza at the time, and just kind of helped.
Amazing.
Like, I just wanted to be involved in Yu-Gi-Oh, but like, I didn't want to like play. I was quite happy to sit back and just not play and just like observe instead. And I guess that's one way I've dealt with things. I've done that sort of thing. I really enjoy judging the regional on the weekend. That's something that I do get quite like a lot of enjoyment out of, like watching cool interactions happen, getting to walk around and kind of just like immerse yourself in the tournament without having the like stress, I suppose, or even if you're not enjoying the format, like I guess the, you know, you don't have to play, right? So like you can kind of just walk around and I know you've had a lot of judging experience before as well, Ruben. Like obviously you're one of the main judges in New Zealand at the moment, so
yeah. That's a really good point. I'm going to definitely piggyback on that one, Joe. That has definitely been my way of staying in the game and still wanting to enjoy it and not fall out of it. I think keeping up to date with releases and product and rulings and interactions is a really cool way for someone who may not be interested in the current meta to still keep up with the game. I think we're obviously spoiled rotten with the amount of content that people create, obviously including ourselves, but there are people, you know, leaps and bounds ahead of us that provide so much amazing content for anyone and everyone wherever you are in your stage of Yu-Gi-Oh! And I think at a local level, like Joe said, asking to photograph, if you know how to use the tournament software, why don't you ask your local store, would you like me to run a tournament so you can like vend and I can just make sure that everyone's still working, maybe show some interest in doing some learn to plays. Obviously the speed duel boxes that are coming out, they're a really cool product to introduce to like younger demographic or people who love GX and don't know what the game's like at this moment in time. For me, definitely though, it was the judging. The judging is so much fun. Yes, you do have to put your foot down, which is, you know, that is par for the course. You have to be assertive in your decisions. And I mean, I've made plenty of mistaken rulings.
I did one on the weekend. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
And you know what? You just have to take them because they're all learning experiences. And I think that's where again, you're reinterested in the game. I think we spoke about it. The exact interaction of Fluanderese and the Unexplored Winds using Riser. Yes, you get the first effect of Riser where you can stack two cards, one on field, one in grave, but if you use Unexplored Winds to summon it, because it never tributed a wind, you don't get the second effect to return a card from field to hand. So, like, those are cool. Those are really cool interactions. I think, like we've seen with like the Souls interactions, the Illusion of Chaos, it doesn't have to put itself back. There's so many useful and like utility interactions that honestly, once I see them or experience them for myself, they make me more interested in the game once again. I love moments where you go, I didn't know I could do that. And I think, Lucas, you've definitely had a couple of those moments in recent times of like, yeah, that's a cool interaction.
I was going to talk about this because hearing you and Joe talk about judging in terms of when you're at a loss for wanting to play Yu-Gi-Oh, it's uniquely something that I've never been interested in. And I think that is just a difference in how people take to Yu-Gi-Oh.
Mm.
Because I know some people are very, for example, some of your Pami locals are very aesthetically interested in Yu-Gi-Oh. They're interested in the art, the story, you know, they love the sleeves and the accessories, and maybe they do fan art, etc. And that's not me. You know, I'm not someone that I appreciate the art. And then there are people like you and Ruben, I think, are a lot more, you know, you may be a little bit more community focused, but more interested in the acquisition of knowledge and kind of the expansion of your knowledge of the game. Ruben, I know for sure, is interested in that. And I don't think I've seen Ruben spark as much as when he's kind of discussing rulings and looking things up. And I guess for me, the thing that brings me back to Yu-Gi-Oh! Is the in-game, you're on the spot decision-making and competitive angle. And I think that's maybe why I'm so interested in this. Other people I know out of Yu-Gi-Oh! Because they can't find a deck, because there isn't really a replacement for the 1v1 aspect of Yu-Gi-Oh! When you're not playing it. And that's what I find the hardest to replace at times when I can't pick a deck.
Yeah.
Because judging's cool, but I don't get the experience of besting someone. You know, like, best Yu-Gi-Oh! Moments are when I've seen a line and it just plays through everything my opponent had, and maybe they misplay, and then you capitalize on it the minute you see that you have a window. Those kind of moments are what I live for.
Mm.
And so that's why, during this meta, I'm drawn to the Adventure Virtual World deck. Because it's highly interactive, but it's also competitive at that level. It's able to hang with every deck that I've been able to play. And definitely Dino is an example of someone I know that is unable to find a deck that suits his playstyle, that also is able to hang with every deck this format. And I think me and Dino are more alike in that we prefer that 1v1 competitive angle, and that's the thing that's difficult to replace. So...
yeah,
I don't know how to solve it. I mean, that's why I'm asking. I'm interested in what you've done when you've been disenfranchised. But it sounds like community and kind of participating in that way has been enough for you.
Yeah, I mean, I won't lie. There's been times as well where I've gone, you know what? I've had enough. And then I would leave for like a year or two. And I've had a couple of those, you know, big long breaks. And that sometimes is a way of dealing with it. Like, I managed to skip the 2018 format of Spiral and then came back and played Toss for a little bit. And then I left again when I was like, I'm kind of done again. And then I came back, 2019? Sorry, 2020, just after the Secret Forces. And yeah, I mean, not Secret Forces, Secret Slayers, thank you. Yeah, so like sometimes like quitting is a thing that you can do, and because you never really quit Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, and I know that that's been said not just by like me, but like lots of people. You always end up coming back. Like locally, Ken quit for a couple of years, went and played some Commander for a few years, and now he's like, hey, this looks interesting again, and he's back again, and now he's into the whole swing of things. So like it. And even locally, Skeggs, and I think you met Skeggs when you were here.
Yes.
He had been away for probably about 4 or 5 years, and he's like, oh, I'm going to come back now. And now he's getting into it, you know, head first. But yeah, I mean, for us, like, I guess it can kind of lead into what I want to talk about with Dunedin. Another way of dealing with it is we can still make content, still commentate, and do other cool things. So...
yeah, talk about community. We hope to be seeing a lot more of the South Island one. I don't know, just starting off, I've never been that far south.
Neither.
I believe the furthest I've ever been is Wanaka. So if my geography is incorrect, I will very much take
like
it.
I don't mind. Of like even line maybe across there. I don't know.
Yeah. But honestly, I've never been that far south. The most I remember is Wanaka. So I've never been to Dunedin. Obviously, we met Greg actually very early into Lucas and I's Yu-Gi-Oh! Journey. We volunteered for Armageddon in 2019. Lucas's birthday, like legitimately Lucas's birthday.
That's true.
And we got to meet Greg, we got to meet Peter Bird. And at that moment in time, in late 2019, is when Greg was like, I really want to open a store. And it's amazing to see it having come to fruition, stood the test of Corona, of the Despacito. And
that's right. This is After Dark. We can say whatever we want. Yeah,
over the Cornover. And I think it's really exciting to see this kind of event going on. I know there's a lot of people traveling. So this is the, for reference, this is the Dunedin kind of a weekend of events. So you have a multi-format event on the Friday the 22nd. So a month from today. Yep. And, well, not a month from today. It's literally 31 days from now. So, you know, so be it. And then the Saturday, the 23rd of April, is the regional. So this is a Battle of Chaos regional season. This will involve prizing of those gorgeous Illusion of Chaos mats and those incredible, like, blush pink deck boxes. And
they look great. I've seen them in person. Yeah.
As have I. And they are very gorgeous. Looking forward to the next color that I am aware that's coming out. However, this blush pink is very exciting.
That's the one I want.
Mm. They look really nice in person. I saw the pictures and I was like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I saw them in person. I was like, whoa, they look pretty cool.
At Konami, they can sure make a deck box.
Konami do know how to make accessories.
Can we just say as well, they've been really knocking it out of the park with mats lately. Like, every single mat they bring out is just so nice. Like, all the structure deck mats been really good. All the sneak peek mats, like, crazy good. Like,
the Albers one is terrible. I will say.
Oh, no.
The Albers one is ass. They put, like, a weird line down the middle of it, unfortunately.
Okay. Don't like that.
Yeah, it's in the warehouse. It's not
amazing.
It's fine.
We will not be winning any of that stuff at Dunedin because the face downs will be providing live coverage.
Yes, we will. I can probably announce it earlier. I don't really mind. I will be your head judge for the event, and I'm excited to see what people bring and cook down. I think that there's going to be a lot of interesting stuff that goes on. Obviously, Joe's a bit more familiar with the Dunedin scene, albeit a couple of years past you now.
Yeah, I mean,
but I think that Dunedin is very diverse. It's a very diverse environment.
Very much correct? Like Palmy. Yeah, it's very similar to what Palmerston North is with a lot of diversity. I think it's evolved a little bit more from when I was down there. When I was down there, I used to just bully everyone with Necros. And then, I think everyone has picked up quite strong decks. Like, we've seen some of their live streams. I remember watching the Magicky deck that performed quite well.
Yep, that was Mike, I believe. Mike Arnigo.
Yeah, so, I mean, they play some really cool stuff down there. And if no one's been there before, like, Dice Jar has, like, one of the coolest setups I've ever seen for, like, a stream. And it looks super, super professional. Like,
yeah, Greg's a workaholic when it comes to that stuff. He's phenomenal at getting technical things going.
Yeah, and for those of our listeners that might not be very much into the Yu-Gi-Oh side of it, they have, and he provides an amazing space for his Flesh and Blood content creators. You've got the, I believe it's the Art of War, a podcast that they run down there. And then they've got the Art of War Plus One, which is their video replays of their Flesh and Blood games. I'm very impressed with the dedication that Greg has. So I think that's I'm excited to be down there in person. Obviously, Luke's and I have commentated over a couple of his streams. It's been super fun. Loved doing it remote. And I think we're all excited to be down there in person.
In person,
And that's one less adventure deck you'll have to play against because I won't be playing.
Two, because Joe's not playing. And one less Wanderies because I won't be down there either playing.
Yeah.
Speaking of decks, what do we think we're going to see? I don't believe this falls in a banless time period.
No possible way.
But it does fall post Albaz.
Yeah.
Well, God willing.
Judging from our events, I'm going to say a lot of Eldritch, a lot of Dragon Link, a decent number of Fluanderese pilots, and then probably Pranks as the most represented adventure deck. But to be honest, it could be all kinds of things.
I think we're going to see a fair few Fluanderese. I know that there's a couple in Dunedin. I know that there's a couple traveling.
Also Invercargill, like the Invercargill and Christchurch meta as well.
Oh, and Despia. There's actually like a silly amount of Despia in the South Island. It feels like that deck is just everywhere down there.
And not to mention, I mean, if we get the Albert structure deck in time, there is going to be branded. It's guaranteed.
Is it out?
Yes. Out. Albers comes out on the 14th of April.
Oh, then I was never playing Adventure anyway. Good luck, everybody else.
It was one week before the event, Albers structure deck does come out.
And congratulations to the winner, someone who bought 3 structure decks. I'm glad to say I can already announce it, because that'll probably, you know, they'll probably top. I reckon you could probably top with 3 structure decks. Ooh, not gonna lie.
Three structures by themselves, I could actually see it. That deck comes with Scythe.
That deck comes with Scythe. It comes with Springen's Kit and Branded Fusion.
It comes with... Well, okay, we don't know what it comes with. We don't have the entire deck list. However, the OCG list has Scythe, Ogre, Veiler.
Yeah, they're fine.
Yeah,
that's a good deck. Barrier. I believe they've got D Barrier as well.
Yeah, I think it's got Dark Ruler as well. Yeah.
Was it Dark Ruler? I think it's either Dark Ruler or Evenly.
Head and a Beard.
Pot of Extravagance. They have X-Drivers in there.
For some reason. Why would you play X-Drive in that deck?
I think because the deck comes with exactly 6 fusions.
That's terrible.
Yeah, I'm just having a quick look up
that deck doesn't need fusions to win, right?
Nope, not at all. It's not like your fusion spell logs into fusions for the turn.
Well, I guess we found the solution to deck paralysis. Just buy 3 of those.
Which is amazing. Like,
that is actually a good solution.
I hate to say it, because obviously there's a very pivotal secret rare from Dawn of Majesty that... it is a very good price point at this moment in time, so kudos to everyone who was able to secure theirs. But that is a main deck 3 of for that strategy. Yeah.
But you don't need it. You literally don't need it. This is a Salamangreat Great without Signet Mining situation.
I think it's a Salamangreat Great without Sunlight Wolf situation.
No, because you can play Branded without Alibur.
Be more like no Gazelle, but you know.
But like Salad without Gazelle. It's still
just the Cybers Turbo.
It's still pretty good. Like, it's still, I wouldn't say no to that at a locals, right? At the time where Salad was actually good. I mean, now it's trash, but you know, back in the day,
it could be. I'm personally just really excited to see, people's take on the branded decks. Like, because we get to commentate like the first regional event after the structure releases. So, like.
Yeah, touch wood. There's no American one.
Yeah, that might not be.
Yeah.
Let's see how this goes. We're not going to make any promises.
No. But like, if we cut
some with me down, that may be the case. I'd be like, how many people want Albers sticks?
Like the black market, like, hey, you want some Albers?
I'll bring my largest trench coat and stack them all in the plane.
$60 a deck.
Yeah. I'll bring an empty suitcase and instead just just stuff it with Albers structure decks.
But it should be fun. If it does go, you know, all things going well, if we do get it, I am personally excited to see all the different variants. And also, like, I know it's relatively solved, but I want to see someone just do something that no one's thought of yet with it.
I don't know how solved it'll be.
I don't think it's solved at all.
I think we are skewed visually by the OCG having to play Max-C. I truly believe, also Max, again, they do not have Dragoon. They only just got Fusion Destiny back. And, okay, to be honest, that's probably the most sold that the deck is probably going to be, is like branded DPE. Mm. But realistically, I don't really know how that deck's going to shape up here. Everyone seems to be talking about Dragoon. I think Dragoon's a wash. I think Dragoon is not as near of a threat as the engine plus Mirror Jade would be. I think Dragoon is... pales in comparison to the combination of Mirror Jade and Destroyer Phoenix Enforcer.
Yeah.
I think that there's so much room for growth. Obviously, we've got the maximum adventure package as well, so you get to basically play the most broken decks with all the tools and no Max-C.
Yeah, I'm willing to put myself on blast here. I'm gonna make a call right now. I think Adventure branded, it's going to be a fine deck. I think it, in fact, will top things, right? I do think, like, week one, that's just going to be, like, the solved deck that everyone plays. Mm-hmm. I think it's, like, the 5th best branded deck. I think Despia branded is maybe 3rd. And there are at least 2 fusion-based combo decks that will just be better. This to me, is a Sword Soul Tenyi situation, where... in the OCG, it really looked like pure Sword Soul with DPE was going to be the best deck. It was nowhere close to what Tenyi combo Sword Soul is now. Mm. As such a, it's just so much better. Yes, Branded Fusion locks you out of Link Summoning, so you cannot use the broken Link monsters like Hulk or any of that stuff, right? But think of all the fusion decks that are on the borderline of playable that can use this. I mean, Frightfur has been like on the fringe of playability for years now, and its cards are extremely broken. It's just one example of a deck that could realistically take advantage of this. I mean, not to mention there are decks that are still around, like Thunder Dragon or Dragon Maids, just things that no one thinks about. And then when you start to look at them with the branded package, get kind of nutted.
Was that a Duelist Alliance in your throat? Or
Sorry, I was just clearing that.
Shadala's cope. Shadala's actually bad. But there are some good fusion decks that you could play with this. Well, and I think the reason that Shadal saw playability was the addition of the structure deck cards boosting it to playability with Schism. Mm. However, like, the best Frightfur card is so much better than the best Shadal card. It's not close.
I mean,
and
Toyvendor as a card is ridiculous.
Patchwork. Fluffle literally have Pot of Greed. They have Pot of Greed.
They have Patchwork, Wings, and Toyvendor. The only thing they're missing is like a win condition.
Yeah.
And Branded Fusion just gives them a win. I mean, don't get me wrong. I do think there will be some other brews. I think Branded Tri Brigade is pretty hot.
Branded Eldritch as well as a deck.
Branded Eldritch, very cool.
I mean, that's... Yeah, I mean, Eldritch can literally do anything. Yes. But I guess my point is that that generic OCG list is going to be mid. It's going to be mid. That is my take.
That's your take? Yeah. I think Venture is so strong, though. I don't know. Like, I think you could be right in the fact that, like, it might not be the best as far as, like, ceiling and power level, but, like... It's going to be the most consistent, maybe, because like
it doesn't have any specific synergy that I think pushes it over the edge. Where Adventure gets pushed over the edge is in decks like exactly Prankid's V-Dub and Pile, where it also acts as a combo extender and enabler.
Yeah,
that's where Adventure gets really unfair, is when the engine that gives you a Nibiru out also makes your combo work. And
that's true.
Branded, it doesn't have a lot of synergy. Like, yes, Fateful discarding a Branded is cool,
it's pretty good,
but a ton of decks have that synergy, and I feel like with Adventure what we've seen is that your deck needs to have some kind of additional payoff to put it above all the other Adventure decks that have additional payoffs, and that's where I think the Branded stuff, it's not necessarily great with Adventure, but in the OCG they're obviously playing Adventure and everything because it basically beats Maxi. You know, you can just give them the one draw and then hold the Griffin Rider, use that to interrupt their next turn because you can do it during either player's turn. Like, you know, that kind of stuff matters a lot more up there.
I think...
Crucify me if I'm wrong. I think
I think you got some points, like, because even in testing, like, I've been running I think it's Andres Torres or something. He topped a PPG over in South America. And I've been using his Despia list, which is, like, has a Frightfur package of, like, the triple agent chain and then the polymerizations and stuff, and it runs two of each of the adventure package, and it's like it's really good when it's good, but then when it's like you draw a hand of like Rite of Amarasir with a Aluba and no other ways of special summoning the Aluba, it's kind of like if this was, I mean, in the current build, it's kind of okay because, like, you kind of just turbo out a Grand Guardian Chimera during their turn is, like, kind of what the deck is. But once we get Branded Fusion, you really want to get that Branded Fusion. And then if you're going to have those sorts of hands, you don't want any conflict, I find, when it comes to, like, deck building.
You want to be able to do that Albion, Lubellion...
Yes,
like the shufflebacks, like, and fusions, like every turn.
Like, listen, if the token or Griffin Rider were a light and that was additional resources, I could see it. Obviously, Enchantress could become a light with Artemis, but like.
The token is a fairy.
The token is a fairy, but that doesn't really.
Doesn't really do too much. Deck. Yeah. No, not really.
It's not a fairy deck, even though it tries to be sometimes. So, yeah.
No, I think it's.
Random side take. It's
going to be interesting, though. I think it's going to be interesting. I don't think it's going to be... I have a horrible feeling it might be interesting for like a week or two, and then once it's solved, it's going to be like, oh, dumb.
See, I think by that time, though, we'll see a ban list. I think that essentially, with Dimension Force coming out the 19th of May and this structure coming out, hopefully, in New Zealand at around 14th, 15th of April, we have like sub a month to test out the format before they attempt to do a reset. Obviously, I have no inside information. We don't know when the next ban list is coming out. The next update is in a few months.
Yeah.
And I think that it's logically, it's May. To be around core sets, because that's when they want to do their next, you know, assumedly seasons of events, like we've seen with Burst of Destiny and Battle of Chaos. Also, thematically, your May set is the last one before a Worlds. Now, that may be very optimistic if that was to go ahead this year. However, the May set is the last one that's generally Worlds legal, I believe, unless maybe the Worlds list comes out in April. I can't remember off the top of my head, unfortunately.
I mean, what is this that you're talking about?
It's something that hasn't happened for literally 3 years.
I've never seen one. So it never happened.
I think
that is unfortunate.
The ban list coming up is going to be one of the hardest ban lists that Konami is ever going to have to tackle. Because in recent times, it usually stands out what the problems are. You know, you look at TOS format. There was only 3 or 4 decks where you're like, okay, well, if we hit this card, and this card from these decks, like, you now have to play the newer decks, newer stuff. At the moment, there's just so many things out there. I just don't know how they, completely format reset.
TOS was also a bit more spread out, whereas a lot of the problem cards in this format are isolated in very specific engines and decks that don't... You can't spread out the hate. You just kind of have to focus a laser on a bad thing and get rid of it. Yeah. But it's also a bad thing that's making them a lot of money. So...
Yeah,
it's hard for me to imagine that they do anything to fix this format. I think Branded will shake it up enough that people won't be that sick of it.
Well, it's also, Branded is very budget-friendly. And, you know, Konami, albeit as they may, you know, Komani, buy. Like, this is a very good strategy.
It is a structure deck.
For $45 or for $60. Like, you are purchasing a very good strategy.
This could have easily been in Ghost from the Past 2 as a broken up.
This could have easily been Ghost from the Past 2 as an imported. It could have easily been a Dimension Force as, like, 6 secret rares out of the 10. Like, there's many ways.
Time. You know, there is still time.
You know, God willing.
For them to announce Branded Fusion as a secret rare in Daifo. I mean, it is possible. Yeah. Let's not our hopes up.
Like, you're right, though. Like, thinking about it, if you were new to the game and you're like, all right, what do I play? You could literally pick up the, the Maximum Gold or whatever that set was with the Eldritch in. You could buy that engine for like $20 and then buy 3 of the structure decks. They're like, give or take, a few staples, like probably for about $100 or $150, you're going to have like a near complete like deck that could probably go on top of regional if you pilot it well enough. Like
1,000%.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So there's still budget options, and I think that's always a thing that we need to like kind of acknowledge in Yu-Gi-Oh.
Good structure decks promote budget options. People want other people to succeed. That's just like how our community wants to be.
They're like necessary.
But I think it's a matter. It's like I wouldn't say that the New Zealand in the New Zealand Yu-Gi-Oh environment, I wouldn't say there's a lot of like gatekeeping of like good strategies. I think also due to the access of content creation, the ability to like keep things secret is very limited. So people want to see competitive strategies at a very competitive pricing. I think it's very appealing for people, and it benefits everyone in Konami. Like they want to see. People go, yes, I can play this strategy for under $100, under $200. Like, there's... That's healthy. That's healthy, and it is necessary. And we've just had clunker after clunker of structure deck there's just been no ability to grow. There was no competitive structured ice barrier deck.
Yeah, that's the problem when there's no structure decks, is there's nowhere to start building a deck. You literally have to hand someone a list of 40 cards and go buy all of these.
Yeah.
And that's quite daunting. You kind of want... someone to be able to go, here's a deck, there's 30 good cards in it, you just have to swap out 10 and you're good to go. I felt that way about dinos. It's like, yeah, take out the Megalomashes, but Survival's End is like pretty good. You could probably keep playing that, and you could play 3 Lost World, and you can play 1 Misk now, but for the longest time, it was so easy to say to someone, get this, keep the 3 OVs, the 3 Misk, the 3 UCT, and all of the good cards. You're about 27 cards at that point. You only have to put in like some hand traps, and you're pretty
much
done.
The Shadol deck, you're like, grab 3 of these, see if you can find some like cheap invoke stuff going around.
At the time.
Before everyone clicked on. But...
some cheap Keeper of Dragon magic or whatever.
And then even when, traps, like, though, you know, like just buy some traps, play trap dolls. Yeah.
Yeah, it was so, there was so many different things, but it was like when the Ice Barrier Structure came out, I was like, well, I don't know.
If you swap out these 37 cards for a full Mermail deck, you're on the right track.
You can play three Crackdown.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the only one that did that recently, the Cyberstrike one, was okay. But like even then, it was kind of like...
I still
like...
think you could swap out like 25 cards from that deck.
The Cyberstrike one's really interesting because it saw success at your regional.
That's true.
His is very good with the deck, so I never underestimate the power of it. It's very pilot dependent. You have to know what your cards do. However, it definitely did invigorate a different strategy. And I think even Kez has made comments on it now and then. It's like you can see that Konami are wanting to pilot like a combination of Cyber and Cyber Dark as the new strategy. They're not trying to like delineate the two. They want to combine the two. But yes, I think that there was like, it's kind of like the weird interim of like a Dino and an Ice Barrier. Like you've got, like Ice Barrier is so very obviously what is the strategy? And then Dino is so obviously, wow, there's an entire strategy. And then you've got things that like fall in the middle of going, I think there's something here, I just need to build on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've done the whole podcast on the structure issue as well. So
Check it out.
You can check that out at some point in our podcast history.
And the ABC structure deck was... Anyway, so I'm looking forward... I am looking forward to it, though. Like, I think that, like, we do need a reset of some description. I don't know how they go about it. I don't know if it's via a ban list, via just bringing out new decks that are, like, crazy broken, like we've seen Labyrinth being
I think
kind of released.
In Labyrinth, Mysteroon is doing very well in Japan.
I think ban list is a little copium. I if you're waiting out for a ban list for this format to get good, I have really bad news for you. It's not gonna
do it. It's product. Yeah. At this point you have to be relying on product and unique.
You gotta hope power creep does its job and puts this stuff out of the meta before it's too bad. All right. So I guess we'll wrap this up. After Dark is a bit of a toll on the sleepies.
Oh,
but in conclusion, talking about that sort of deck paralysis, I guess closing thoughts in terms of deciding on
wait and see if Brandon does anything.
Yeah.
And then
I mean it's a couple of weeks away from that release.
Yeah. I mean, there's gonna be a little bit of that.
Identified was, you know, everyone has their own way of dealing with it. And I guess the best thing to do is find out why you actually like playing card games is important. Because
is it the strategy, is it the competitiveness, or is it the people? Because at that point, if it's the people, enjoy your social interactions with them outside of the game. If you've made some amazing friends, ask them out to dinner.
Go get a drink. Yeah.
Go get a drink. Yeah. Go to a ramen bar. Go enjoy like a teppanyaki. You know, there's so many cool things that you can do with people outside of a social environment. And I think what the Yu-Gi-Oh community does provide to essentially everyone is a place where you can meet like-minded people. Yeah. And people that share your interest, and you already have a common ground with someone. You already, you don't, there is no icebreaker of like, what do you enjoy? You quite obviously both enjoy this card game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you can stick it out and just say, you know what? Even though I hate it, I'm just going to play the best deck. I mean, I got to give respect to Aaron Dennis that he has played some of the worst formats of all time, and he plays the best deck during them. He played during Full Power Spiral, he's playing Pile now. That is a way you can approach it, is to just brute force it and go, I don't have to like the deck, I'm gonna play the best deck. That's a way you can be. And I honestly feel that way sometimes when I'm out of the game, is like, well, I'll just play the best deck because I like the competitive side.
Yep, swipe your credit card and get ready to have some fun.
Yeah, or you could even do big money wasting things like buying a full Duelist Alliance cube. Like the just, you know, and you have the toss cube, you know, just build like fun decks from previous formats and just.
Oh, that's well, a great thing, actually. Sorry, I'm totally going to pick up that on my closing thoughts. Max out some cards. Enjoy some high rarity.
Just spend some money.
If you're not hottest on the meta right now, but you still want to enjoy the game, add some pretty to your decks. There are some great little upgrades you can do. There are some very cost-effective upgrades you can do as well.
For some people, maybe that is the fun part, yeah.
Maybe it's just like swapping out your, you know, unlimited editions for first editions or getting a super rare of a common that
this
you
is
have.
This is a subtle reminder to get rid of your unlimited from the face down.
What?
Hey, wait, the OTS print.
OTS print. But yeah, maybe get like a nice super rare, or if you like the old print of a card, why don't you go find that one instead?
I'll go get some first ed Ulti Dark Claws, how about that?
Yeah.
You better. As soon as you find them, let me know. I'll put That's them true. Right next to my first Ed Sky Striker ultis.
Yeah. Well, actually, old formats also, if you really like the competitive stuff, I think that's actually good because it's still competitive 1v1 Yu-Gi-Oh!
And it teaches you as well.
And it teaches you old stuff, and it's also separated from necessity. If you're sick of 2014, you can go play 2012. If you're sick of that, you can go play 2018 for some godforsaken reason. You know, you can actually move around and be mobile. And I think that's one thing Yu-Gi-Oh! Doesn't have, even though it's an eternal format, is mobility when it comes to your experiences. So that's another good one. If you like competitive stuff, you're burnt out on the current meta, old format seems to be the ultimate healer. Even like friends of ours, like Harry, we played some plant synchro against him, and he's like, man, this is fun. This is so much more fun than current Yu-Gi-Oh! And I do sympathize with that, as much as I'm enjoying my tier 2 deck. Yeah, I can understand why people would prefer to play Duelist Alliance format. I totally do.
I think there's so much versatility. And hey, if you enjoy playing old formats, be sure to head down to Dice Jar Games.
True!
And hop on 6:30 Friday, the 22nd of April. I think that's going to be a great time. And if you want to play some current format and potentially enjoy the Wrath of Branded, be sure to head to Dice Jar on the 23rd of April and sign up for the regional.
You could be featured on stream and have us commentating over the top of you. So
I will. Yeah. We will say you can't do that, and then you absolutely can. That's happened quite a bit. You can't do this, and then they go, no, you absolutely can. And that's fine. And I think that you've got so many options. If anyone out there is feeling a wee bit burnt out, it will pass. Every valley rises to a mountain. So you will always find a peak after a fall. And I think that there is, a peak on the horizon. I think personally for me, the next two upcoming sets, I'm so excited for. Mm. I'm excited for Dimension Force, and I'm definitely excited for Power of the Elements.
Yeah, I think we need new stuff. We've been playing the same decks now for years. We need some new stuff. So
I mean, I'll play Virtual World for another format. I'll keep doing it.
Yeah, I mean, but
you can't stop me.
you'd probably want to play against some new things as well, right? Even with Virtual World, brings up some new interactions.
If I can activate Lulu, I'm happy.
Yeah, sweet.
You know what? Get into it. Normal summon Rabina. That's what I've got to say. But as always, thank you so much to everyone who's joined us and listened to today's episode After Dark. If you are listening to us along on YouTube, please feel free to like, comment, and subscribe. It does help out a lot. Share it with your friend. If you're listening on your preferred podcasting app, be sure to leave us a rating. That also helps out heaps. You can go ahead and follow us at our Twitters. They are linked down below, as well as displayed on the video for those of you who are watching along. And if anyone has any questions, comments, queries, or concerns, you can always feel free to email us at thefacedowns@gmail.com. That's thefacedowns@gmail.com. We love reading your comments, your questions, and we look forward to hearing from you guys. Obviously, I think we can now announce it. Congratulations to Henry, who won our giveaway.
Oh, yeah, Henry Alga won the contest. Yeah. Congratulations.
Henry Alga won our contest. Congratulations to Henry. So we'll be sure to provide you an amazing T-shirt and a Shadol Showdown structured deck mat. And thank you so much again to everyone who's entered. We look forward to our next giveaway coming soon. And as always, thank you so much for listening. My name is Ruben.
I'm Lucas.
And I'm Joe.
And you've been listening to
The Face Downs.
After Dark.
Oh, we were in sync, Joe!
God, the feminine urge to like bend the time remixing our theme tune with a saxophone. I might do it.